Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Ball 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, we're back. We're back, and it's Five Bad Brothers You Know So Well, and it's probably going to be a July 4th episode. I mean, we're going into weeks where people have birthdays, vacation time, things like that. I'm back home, feeling good, not looking drawn like I was last week.
Yeah, what the fuck? Oh, wow.
All right.
Let's go.
4th of July, baby.
Playing the role of Hunter S. Thompson is the professor this week. By Tom's look, we don't know if he's still representing June or the 4th of July. So
he mixed them up.
We'll just roll with it. So,
is that a Bud Light hat or a Pabst Blue Ribbon hat?
PBR, baby.
I love it.
Full on redneck.
I love it.
You're lucky I can procure some 4th of July fireworks.
That's the hipster beer of choice, man. PBR.
Well, it'd be awesome if your bow there was fireworks and you can light it up.
There's probably about 50,000 firework places I passed on the way to and from my destination last week. And, there were one billboard that says, stop off of this exit for all your guns and ammo, and Jesus Saves right next to it, off the same exit. If you're from the Northeast and fireworks are a illegal activity in the state of Massachusetts, even sparklers, passing places like that is pretty much a trip. So the professor brought the theme. Let's start off with some sad news. We'll start with another passing. One of the actors from a lot of things that we grew up in, Martin Mull, known for a lot of probably bit acting roles. But when I found out that he had passed, the first thing I thought of was he was the asshole boss in Mr. Mom that was trying to get Terry Garr to leave Michael Keaton. I thought that, he always played that, pretty much bit acting part. You know, if you needed him to play a dad, he was a dad. If you needed him to play that teacher in high school that nobody liked or some asshole boss, he was like so eclectic with his range of stuff he could play with his look. Let's go to the professor. Thoughts on the passing of Martin Mull.
It was a shame. I mean, how old was he? 80 years old. I remember him most from Clue, and from TV. He was on Roseanne. I remember him from Roseanne, the original Roseanne, and I think he was on Sabrina the Teenage Witch as well. But what I didn't realize is that he had written a book.
Thoughts on the passing there, Phantom? We got a drop on that one.
It's funny. The name was like super familiar. I look him up because I know who he is. I see his face. Couldn't name not one thing that he was in, but I know who he is. Sorry for your loss.
Bradford, want to save this segment on Martin Wall, please?
Absolutely not. I agree with the Phantom. I was like, who the crap is Martin Mull? Then I saw a picture of him. I was like, that guy. He's been in almost every single pop culture hit, movie, TV show as basically the same guy in everything. He always plays like that questionably, maybe he's gay, maybe he's not, principal, husband. I don't know. He had a range. He was funny. He is, I mean, I only seen him in comedies anyway, but I remember him most from Roseanne. But like kind of the same guy he played in Roseanne, I feel like he played in every movie or TV show. But don't know the name, knew the face. Sorry for your loss, man.
Ed, Martin Mull.
Well, I have to say, I think I agree with everybody else here on the panel. Like, I was like, who is this guy?
Hell of a mustache, though. Hell of a mustache.
And then all of a sudden, back, he was in Taxi. You know, he was in one episode of Taxi. He was in Golden Girls. I mean, you know, I mean, to follow up, I mean, he was in Roseanne. He had a recurring role in Roseanne for a while. Yeah. As well, boss and that type of thing. And, you know, I mean, he was one of those guys where he seemed to just, in almost every TV show or movies and stuff like that, he was always seemed to be in there, that kind of like late 70s through the 80s, early 90s type of thing. So that's all
he was in Arrested Development. I knew I recognized him, and I want to say he played the same character in Arrested Development as all the other shit, but also Arrested Development, if you haven't seen it, go watch it. Most hilarious TV show that was ever made.
The thing about him is, if you look at his IMDb, can you imagine that residuals check that he got from all that movie and TV? That's some good living right there. It, not known for anything, but was in everything. So
was in Reno 911. He was in everything.
He was in The Simpsons and Family Guy.
He was in Reba.
Everything. Everything.
The Ellen Show.
Just nuts.
Dexter's Laboratory.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Sabrina. Hey, can we talk about how Tom knew that he was into Sabrina the Teenage Witch?
Well,
hey, don't be hating. You talk about The Notebook every week, dude. You want my boa?
I'm not hating, man. I'm not hating.
Listen,
he was in Miss Doubtfire. Holy crap!
There's another passing we're gonna get to, but we'll wait till we get to the wrestling portion of the show. Kind of a big one, but we'll get there. So let's pause this Martin Mull madness for some Ed's mailbag. Ed, what do you got this week in the bag?
Well, this is brought to us by Goon Guard at goonguard.com. So this comes from Angie from Fairhaven, Massachusetts. I mean, I have to say that there may be a couple people that may or may not know her that's on this panel right now, just saying. Hello, 1973. Came across your podcast through Facebook. What's the background of your friendship, and did you grow up together? Angie, Fairhaven, Massachusetts. Nice to get one so close to home.
Ed, why don't you take that one? Why don't you start?
Well, I'd have to say that I've known Andy for quite some long time. We grew up, I'd have to say, together. And, you know, and then Tom and I, I think we played baseball against each other a few times back in the I think right around probably what, 1984, 1985, Tom. I think we played against each other in the Rochester All-Star Tournament for baseball. And yep. Then through Andy, got introduced to Ryan. And then Brad is a former coworker of mine. So that's kind of like how everybody ties in. And we all kind of have similar interests, and we're all a bunch of goofballs because that's how we roll.
Does that email say anything about stories or anything like that?
Nope, that was it.
Okay.
That was verbatim, man.
I don't want to incriminate anybody if I get you know, off the cuff with this, but Professor, you want to touch base with any of that stuff from that email?
I have a funny story about Ed the first time I ever, well, besides baseball, because I forgot playing against him in baseball, but first time we were in high school and we were going to a record store in Fairhaven, Mass. And we were going in, two of my high school friends were going in, and Ed was coming out, and they knew each other. They had grown up together, I guess. And they said, hi, what's up? And they walked away. So I said, hey, who's that guy? And the kid says, that's Ed Sylvester. You don't want anything to do with that guy. He's bad news.
In a trouble way or a sexual way?
No.
Phantom, you want to add anything to that little email? Want to touch on that at all?
Oh, I know Mr. Andrew from high school. Started playing hockey together back in the day. And then through that hockey playing, I met Ed. I met Tom through softball through a mutual friend.
Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Ball 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
And I just met Brad probably a month ago. Hell of a guy.
Hell of a guy.
So it's funny. It's the whole, I guess, to tie it all together to answer this email, everything is kind of a culmination of like-minded individuals. You kind of, as you get older, you realize the circle gets smaller and life brings people in and out of it all the time. And you always try to, just stay in contact with the people that are going to kind of pick you up when you're down, and you pick them up when they're down, and you just kind of roll with it. And everything else kind of goes to the wayside. And just the guys on the podcast, whether we've had them on for one episode or a few episodes, it's all people that we've either connected with, lost connection with, trying to get back in contact with. And I think, one of the people always say, you know, that social media has bad points to it. But one of the good things about social media is the chance to connect and stay in contact with people that you haven't seen in a while, that have moved away, or you still see family photos or what they're doing or places they've been or when they're coming home, or that's kind of what it's all about. And the podcast is just to bring everybody together maybe once a week. I've said it multiple times, just to do what we would do if we were sitting watching games or wrestling or sitting in Cinema 140 and yucking it up or
whatever. This has a little bit less ball busting, but yeah.
Yeah, well, I said this last week or the week before. In the world we live in, we cannot be 100% of what this podcast could be, because if it was, It would be so outlandish.
We couldn't even be 75% of like what we could.
Yeah, there's stories that I'd love to tell that you can't, because we would love it. There's certain demographic of people in our genre that would love it, but there's just some things that you just would love to say.
You can't talk about it.
We'll be rolling, and I'll have something in my head on the Rolodex of comedy, and I can't say it. So it ends up being less because I can't give you more. So I thought that was a great email. Hopefully it's a new listener, somebody that we might know. Somebody came across a Facebook page. The Facebook page over the last week or two has blown up. I mean, the reach has been like 2 million people over the last 2 weeks. So hopefully some of those eyes will come this way, and we'll get this thing going. So speaking of getting this thing going, thanks for the email. I thought it was a cool email. You can kind of roll with that a little bit with some comedy, and let's talk wrestling this week. Well, Brad loves the wrestling. We'll talk wrestling, but I want to ask, we'll start with the Phantom. One of the most eclectic views in the group. I want to ask him one question. Who killed WCW, in your opinion?
I am going, as much as they were getting into the AOL stuff, I'm going Eric Bischoff. That's my guy with the, it was a lack of leadership to me. You got that. You got the inmates running the asylum, the overpayment. Like anything else, you give somebody so much money, and all they have to do is show up, they're going to stop working for that money. They're already where they're at, and then the people that are getting less aren't going to show up for work, because why are you going to bust your ass for a quarter of what the other guys are getting? That's kind of my thoughts on it. I mean, there was definitely shared in the demise of it all. But if I got to pick one person, I'm going Bischoff.
Ed, I'm going to ask you the same question. Who killed WCW?
I'm going to give you the 33.33 times three, because there's three different ways. Number one, it's Eric Bischoff would be number one. And that's going to piggyback on what Ryan said. But then number two, it's going to go with the executives that don't know about wrestling, and they didn't think about wrestling. All they want to do is ratings and defeat another network. And then number three, it was the inmates in the asylum. Number one would be the man that says his prayers, eats his vitamins, and he has 24-inch pythons. The man had total creative control. And the thing about it was that he always did a great job of keeping everybody down instead of bringing people up. And just some of the storytelling and everything like that. And it took three to tango, basically, you know. And all three parties have had involvement in why it disintegrated. But that's my opinion.
Professor, who killed WCW?
Well, let me tell you something, brother. First of all, I think it was a little bit of everything. I kind of agree with you guys, but I think a lot of it was the executives. You had certain executives that were trying, seemed like from the get-go, trying to get them off of TV. They weren't happy with them. The thing that was, to me, just proves the point is that Bischoff had a deal for what, like $65 million to sell the company, and they'd still be on TV those two nights. And the guy, Kellner, I think his name was, said no, we turned the deal down. And then he ends up selling for like $4 million to McMahon. So that, to me, that right there is a telling sign that he was just trying to unload the company. He didn't want anything to do with it. But I have to say, I think it's crappy that Hogan, Goldberg, and Nash even said it on the thing that he didn't go down with the ship. They pretty much refused to show up on the last episode. That kind of... was shitty on their part. But plus, like Franco said, Bischoff, and he didn't help matters. And like the Phantom said, the inmates were running the asylum. And I think goes back to the fact that they couldn't push their own guy. Like they were trying to give Sting the belt with Hogan, and Hogan would refuse. It's just a lot of different little things, I think. It's like a death by a million little paper cuts.
All right, Bradford, who killed WCW?
Man, I mean, you guys said it. Like, death by a million cuts. There is a multitude. You could point the finger at least a half a dozen people. But if you had to pick one person who was basically in charge of all of those people and had a responsibility to make this company successful, it would be Eric Bischoff. As much as people don't want to admit it, Vince Russo, did he have a hand in screwing the company over? 100%. Did the executives have a hand screwing the company over? 100%. Ted Turner, even Vince McMahon, lowballing and buying out for $4 million, had a hand in destroying this company. Hogan, you name it, Nash, they all had a hand. It's Eric Bischoff's responsibility to go sell this business to those CEOs and to the eggheads that are pushing the papers. It's his responsibility to take back creative control, to run the company. Do you think Vince McMahon ever was like, yeah, hey, Hogan, yeah, hey, Sting, oh, yeah, hey, Razor Ramon, oh, yeah, hey, Ultimate Warrior, oh, hey, Andre the Giant, y'all go take creative control. I'm going to sit back. I'm going to drink, you know, my martinis, and I'm gonna kick it out over here. Hell no. Vince McMahon was in those meetings doing that shit. Probably doing shit that we don't know about. Come to find out. getting favors, giving favors. But Vince McMahon would never just sit back. That WWF was so successful because of his attitude towards the business. And I think Eric Bischoff, is all his talents and what he had, I think he was in way over his head. Way over his head. And if he was a savvy businessman that he claimed to be, he would have brought in somebody to be a writer, to be a creative. He would have brought in somebody to manage the talent, to manage all their superstars, or a star-heavy roster. You got to have somebody control that. He would have brought somebody in who knew business shit, who could have went to those boards to secure advertising, to secure TV spots. He didn't do any of that. He can blame Russo all he wants. And what I saw in that last episode.
Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Ball 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Russo blamed Bischoff. Bischoff blamed Russo. Nash blamed somebody. You know, everybody blamed somebody else. And nobody, not one single person in those four episodes said, it was me, I fucked up. Not one. That's what killed WCW.
Well, I'm going to ask one more time, rapid fire around the group. Favorite person on the episodes, least favorite person on the episodes.
Conan was my favorite.
Conan was your favorite, Ed. And who was your least favorite?
I don't know. I'd have to say probably, I don't know. I loved him when he was a wrestler and everything like that, but I'd have to say Kevin Nash really lost favor with me.
Professor, who least favorite, most favorite?
Least favorite's easy. Bro, Vince Russo, I'm so fucking think of the, get some more vocabulary, man. Jeez, I'm so tired of hearing bro. Let me tell you, bro. Oh, ridiculous. And probably
what was that, bro?
Probably Conan.
Phantom, bro? Favorite, least favorite.
I'll probably say my favorite was Booker T. Yeah, I think he had some like pretty honest views. He was also a fan of his as well. But you know what kind of rubs me the wrong way? Even though what he was saying wasn't really anything over the top, Goldberg. He's, I don't know, it just seems like he's a dick. Like, I was a fan of him when he wrestled, but his takes on things is like, I don't think he was really like in the limelight long enough to like have the opinion that he has. Mm. At least when like Kevin Nash were probably screwed up because he was one, you know, he was one of the guys that were on top that probably didn't want to relinquish his spot. But when, like over the years of all the stuff I've heard that Kevin Nash has said, I feel like he knows wrestling. So if he's talking about stuff that makes money and things that don't make money and that kind of thing, I think that he's, you know, he's got a pulse to it anyways, where Goldberg, not so much, but I'd probably go with those two.
Bradford, favorite, least favorite.
My favorite, and this might not be popular opinion, I thought Kevin Nash was brilliant. He was brutally honest. He spoke the truth. He straight up was like, the finger poke of death fucked everything up. You know, the fan, it was over with the fans, but when they said, what's your moment that sticks out? It was that, you know, he gave kudos to the good stuff that Bischoff did do. And he was brutally honest, man. Like he didn't hide nothing. He didn't cover nothing up. No, he's like, I still got paid the same. The money,
my like, man.
He didn't hold anything back. You know, he was as true as he could have been. My least favorite, and I don't know if it's old age, too many concussions, CTE, but the more Bret Hart gives interviews, the more I can't stand this guy. Like, fucking let it go, man. Let it go. Get over yourself. The past is in the past, man. Like, Jesus Christ. Gets on my nerves.
So
Bret Hart complained so much about Hulk Hogan, but I think if he ended up getting, like, Hulk Hogan's spot, he would be just like him.
Well, he wouldn't know what to do with himself, man. He wouldn't know what to do.
Yeah. It's all that boom in the 80s that was so great for wrestling that created how Hogan was with his whole career. So, I mean, the only person that never changed from the 80s is Hogan's personality. I mean, he protected that Hulkamania gimmick as long as he could, and he, you know, I mean, they brought in guys to work with him when he first got there that were his friends that knew what he expected. He expected a light work schedule. Everybody was going to just, you know, do the three big punches, the big boot and the leg drop, and you know, they weren't going to hurt him at all. He only worked with guys that he trusted, and they were okay with it because wherever he went, he took them with him. I mean, the Nasty Boys and all those guys, that whole crew that he ran with in the mid-90s on, they all ended up in the NWO pretty much. But so from what I understand, the Vice, that is their most highest rated wrestling package of shows that they've ever put together. There was more people watching that than any of the Dark Side of the Rings. So I don't know if it, because The Rock's name was attached to it, that had a lot of, you know, power to draw an eyes to it. But I hope they do more things like that. I don't know what else they could do, but it at least it gives the classic wrestling fans something to watch and the new school fans something to kind of gravitate to for a little history lesson. So speaking of history lessons,
let's see. I agree with Ryan and I agree with Brad. Brad, your point about Kevin Nash, I'm just saying, my point was, it just, he took a couple steps back because of how great he was back in the day. That was my only opinion. But I agree with you. He shot it straight. Ryan, totally agree with you about Goldberg. He came across as like a huge dick. And then the whole point about Bret Hart, that's also true too. Man, he's just getting grouchy as he gets older.
Yeah.
You know?
From the Goldberg kick.
Yes, yeah. Goldberg kick.
Yeah.
Still crying about it.
Did you know that Goldberg kicked Bret Hart?
I did.
Bret Hart, he just took a picture the other day with Snoop Dogg. Do you think he remembers taking the picture with him? Is he concussed?
No chance.
Well, you know, he took a kick from Goldberg. You know,
yeah.
Bret Hart complaining about that Goldberg kick ending his career would be like the Iron Sheik saying, "I only lost Hulk Hogan because Vince wanted me to, but I could have broke his leg." Yeah. When Bryan Gagne wanted me to, and he never would have been champion. It's come on, just let it go. Let it go. There's a lot of wrestling in between that kick and now. So yeah, just let it go. Where I was going with the vintage wrestling stuff is we had a passing this week. Kind of big if you're a Roman Reigns fan. Kind of big if you're a fan of classic wrestling like we are. One half of the Wild Samoans. Sika. Not the one I thought was going to pass away first. I always thought Afa was going to be the one. He just had surgery recently. So how do we hit this? Do we hit this from a Roman Reigns perspective, or do we just hit this from thoughts of the Wild Samoans? Because I have a lot of great memories of the Wild Samoans.
I say we hit it straight and let it spray out.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I thought those guys were crazy. They would eat fish on TV. They never talked. They would eat raw food. And when they were with Captain Lou, absolute magic with Captain Lou. When Captain Lou was a bad guy and he had Morocco and those guys, it was wrestling gold. It just worked so well. And phantom thoughts on the Wild Samoans.
My Wild Samoans thing that I always remember, and I don't know what the date of that match was, but if we figured it out, it's probably right around the time where I kind of really started watching wrestling enough to like really, really pay attention to it, is when Captain Lou gave the chair shot and broke the chair around it, and the chair broke perfect, and it was like around his neck like a necklace. That's the one thing that's like, I know, like stands out to me, that he had cost him that match by making the mistake of hitting him with the chair. Who do they wrestle that day, Andy?
That was the match where Tony Atlas and Rocky Johnson won the tag belts.
So what do you figure, like 79, 80? Or was it after that?
That was 83. Late.
Was 80. It? All right. I thought it was earlier than that.
No.
I got a little bit of the Bret Hart got kicked by Goldberg.
I was one year old.
Holy shit. Yeah, definitely Sika, definitely the one of the OGs to the bloodline for sure.
Yeah. Ed, thoughts on the Wild Samoans?
Oh man, I remember when they used to come to the ring and then like, man, eating fish in the ring. I mean, that was just like
Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Ball 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
And, you know, just seeing how big they were in the ring, it was just like, man, those guys are just massive. And I did a little bit of a deep dive. I totally forgot that they had he synced up with Kamala, and they had the thing with Mr. Fuji and Kimchi. I totally forgot all about that. But I mean, you know, he had such a big ring presence, you know, and it was just like it was back in that day, like you were talking about, like, you know, they weren't jumping around, you know, doing all these moves that they're going to get paralyzed doing. They had ring charisma, and they could tell a story. They could speed it up and then slow it down and speed it up again and slow it down. And it just seems like these matches today compared to like when he was doing it, you know, they're too fast.
See, the Samoans, when I was a kid, when I saw them one time at New Bedford High School, when they had a small show, and both of the Samoans were there, but they were in separate matches. And I can remember when they came out, even with a small crowd, people were like afraid of them because they didn't do anything to make you afraid of them. But they were like the persona you saw on TV, that these guys were loose cannons, that you didn't want to like touch them or anything like that, because, you know, they would give you that look and that whole mystique of, is it, you know, blending that line of these guys like, you know, cannibals? Are they like from the island? Do they speak English? And, you know, that's what I miss with it. Yeah, I miss stuff like that. Thomas, thoughts on the Wild Samoans?
It's three-time WWF Tag Team Champions, three-time Mid-South Champions. The one I didn't realize, I knew they won the NWA Championships once. I did not realize they had ever faced the Fabulous Freebirds. They beat the Freebirds for the belts. I did not know that. That just shows you how long they wrestled, because the Freebirds, I mean, were what, 80s, mid-80s maybe, early 80s?
Yeah, when they came to the United States in the 70s, they weren't even the Samoans. They were the Islanders when they started.
Mm. Yeah.
All those Hawaiian guys came through Pacific Northwest. Don Owens in Oregon came in that way, and then they kind of started traveling through the territories. But that's how Snuka got here, too. They all came in through Peter Maivia kind of connection, brought them all kind of in.
The one thing I'll remember about them, like these, not to say these days, but within the last few years, is when Roman Reigns won the belt and he went nuts. He was in the front row. He took his shirt off. He was waving it around. He was all hyped. That's the one thing that I thought was pretty cool, was when he kind of broke kayfabe. I mean, just was just a fan and just was loving it and was like proud of his kid.
Well, I'm gonna go, speaking of kids, we're gonna ask the youngster on the podcast, Bradford, thoughts on the passing of Sika.
This is like the one time in my life I get to be the young guy, so I like to relish it. way before my time, man. But you know, we've seen since I've started this podcast with y'all, I've kind of lost count of how many wrestlers have passed away since in just a short while since I started this with y'all, since I joined you. It's been a lot. You know, the great ones don't have longevity anymore. You know, they hit that old age, and you know, their bodies were so battered and beat up from, you know, that golden era of wrestling, they just weren't taking care of themselves. So now when guys like Roman Reigns goes and takes a 3, 4, 5 month, however long break, I'm like, please do. By all means, Seth Rollins, take 3 months to rehab your knee before you come back. You know, you will always be the MVP of WrestleMania. You know, like go take your break, get healthy, come back, you know, because we want to see you guys long term. We don't want you guys, you know, passing away, you know, way too soon, you know, either. So It's kind of the you know, the trend for these old timer wrestlers, though, man. So,
Andy, Mrs. Professor wants to know if you touched him. She said that there is a track record.
I did. I had my arms around both of them. And the
Grim Reaper.
They were fantastic. What I will say about when you meet that crowd, like when I met Ivan Koloff, when they ask you that question of, when did you start watching wrestling? And you make that connection that you're not just there with a buddy, or you're not just there, you know, because you brought your kid, and you're there and you actually can tell them certain things that you saw them do on TV and how old you were at that. They actually, you get like a pop out of them. And those guys were like the same. There was like not a big line for them. Go in there, start to, I'm like, oh, the Samoans, should I be scared? And then they start laughing. They're like, get over here. And they like, they grab you. And when they grab you, those guys got some grip on them, I will say. You know, some of these guys, they got that natural big guy strength still. Like, I don't know if it's tendon strength or whatever. You know, it's just like that Baron von Raschke, that claw. When they grab you, it's like,
Rocky Johnson was like that. When he shook my hand, his hand went up like to my, almost to my elbow. His friggin' hand was huge.
It's crazy. So that goes back to that aura of all that stuff I say that's missing in wrestling is the I don't want to say the men's men, but the guys that can't work a 9-to-5 job. I don't want to see a guy wrestling that looks like he could bag my groceries at Walmart. that's what I don't want to see. I want to see guys that are loose cannons. This guy can't function in a regular 9-to-5. That's what I want to speak. But what I want to ask Brad, and I was kind of segueing into it, saving him for last, the bloodline. We're going to talk. He's going to bring us up to speed on all things bloodline, Paul Heyman, wrestling. Go ahead, Bradford.
Man, so yeah, SmackDown, if you guys didn't get a chance to watch it, go back, catch the highlights. It's all over social media right now. So basically, the blood... What's that?
My boy.
Yeah.
Jacob Fatu.
Man. So at first they were worried about Fatu coming out and kind of upstaging Solo. They were 100% right. The man is a beast. He's an absolute animal.
I've been telling you.
Yeah. So they've kind of, he has been relegated to this backseat role. And so they initiated everybody in the bloodline on Friday Night SmackDown. And Solo came out, and he wanted everybody to acknowledge him. And one by one, they all acknowledged. Now, it's interesting because the Tama Tonga and his brother both kind of exchanged glances. Like, they're kind of unsure about this current path they're on, but they're still going along with it. Very reminiscent of, like, how Jay and Jimmy used to be behind Roman Reigns. Like, they're kind of playing that up again. But obviously, like, Tama Tonga, his brother, just jacked. But anyway, so they brought out Paul Heyman, and Paul Heyman comes out, his eyes are bloodshot, he's got a 5 o'clock shadow, he looks like he's just a mess. And they pull out the Red Dragon's teeth necklace, and he wants to be anointed as the tribal chief. And I'm gonna talk about the biggest pop I haven't seen in weeks. He was like, I acknowledge you, but not as my tribal chief. The crowd goes wild, man. So they beat him up. Poor Paul Heyman. He took some bumps like a champ. They get him out of the ring. I feel like this was kind of initiation for Jacob Fatu, though, because he had to have the Paul Heyman fupa all over in his face in order to get the powerbomb down. But he did it. He took it like a champ. He got initiated on live TV. Man, it was absolutely amazing. And I was on the edge of my seat, because I'm waiting. I'm like, if Roman Reigns comes back, now is the fucking time. But his father had passed, so I was like, you know, it makes sense. Then I was like, CM Punk, cue his music. Somebody come save Paul Heyman. Nobody came out. I was a little disappointed at that. It went off air. But even before that, Cody and the boys got into it with security, beefing with the bloodline. And so that heel Cody, like, he's starting to show up week after week, beating up security guards. He gave a security guard a crossroads. I swear he broke that dude's neck. He did not land correctly. The camera never showed him. I don't know if that dude ever got up off the floor. I'm just going to say, they never showed him again. But then Cody's in the ring with the mic talking about he don't have a viable option. Nobody wants to challenge him. And Randy Orton, is every time he said it like three times, and every time he said it, Randy was like, "What? Like, excuse me? Like, you don't have a you don't, nobody challenged you?" So I'm waiting for that beef to happen. But I think right now Cody has like a no contact type of thing going, because Fat Two's first night, he broke my homeboy's ribs, broke two of his ribs when he Samoan splashed them through the table. So Cody's injured. I think they're going to get him healthy for Money in the Bank, and we'll see what happens from there.
I told you, you can go back to one of those podcasts a while back. I said, if they get him, that's the guy, the Samoan Werewolf. That's the nickname.
Insane. And his brother Zilla posted a cryptic tweet on Twitter talking about, I'm ready, I'm coming, I'm next, something to that. So I'm like, fuck, where's this guy at?
Yeah, he looks a lot like Umaga.
Yes,
that one.
Gonna be insane.
They don't stop coming, those guys.
I was this close to being done with the Bloodline, and now I'm like, no, please, let's keep this going. Jimmy's in rehab, so we're waiting for him to get healthy. Literally, I think he's in rehab for drugs. That's what I read anyway. So he's going to get healthy, get him back. Jay is cooking. Roman's going to get healthy. Man, can only go up from here. Like, it's incredible.
Yeah, the thing that on, if you go back and watch that clip, and it's only like 2 minutes long, you can find it. It's on Twitter, whatever. If you watch Jacob Fatu, he's so ingrained with getting himself over that he's pacing in the back.
Yeah.
Like, just so that people are paying attention. What's this guy going to do? He's like a loose cannon, you know, just to like, he's not just standing there with a suit on. He's like, I want eyes on me. Like, look at me. I'm going to do something. So, yeah, it's definitely the Triple H era. I'm very impressed with so far. I'm impressed with, you know, they brought a little bit of the blood back. They, you know, in the storylines, they're probably going to get a little bit more aggressive when they go to Netflix. That's the next thing we're going to talk about. I had seen a post that when Raw moves to Netflix, it's going to be 2 hours. I like that. Compress the show. I would love to see all the WWE content in one show. That would be epic. You would get everybody on one show. I don't think that's going to happen, because I heard SmackDown's going to go 3 hours. So that's not a good sign. So, Phantom, thoughts on Raw going to Netflix? You think it's going to be awesome?
Yeah, I think it's going to be great. It's going to be uncensored. So I don't know how far they're going to push the envelope, but I don't want them to get too crazy with it. But at least it gives them some really good options as far as the storytelling, and, you know, let's get that thing going a little bit more adult oriented, not kid oriented. I would say, at the end of the day, who's watching wrestling? Like, my son's friends, obviously teenagers, are going into their 20s. They're not big wrestling fans like us. Like, the wrestling is more like for people our age. Like, we're the ones that kind of grew up watching wrestling. So you got to kind of put all your stories to your demographic of who's watching. I'm like, I'm sure there's a lot of women that like watching wrestling. But like, well, what's the percentages? I'm sure the girls aren't all getting together and let's watch wrestling together. You know what I mean? You got a little bit of everything. But for the most part, I would say it's probably males between, you know, the age of like 20 to probably 50 or even older. That's my opinion with it. But I think it'll be good. I just want to see if they take a hit with people having to get Netflix. I mean, I kind of think like everybody has it. Well, I'm sure there's a shit ton of people that don't. I want to know, like, I can remember, like, when we used to watch Howard Stern all the time. And then he left the radio to go to, like, Sirius. After that, I never listened to Howard Stern ever again. Because I never had picked up Sirius after that. I mean, he still lasted. I'm sure he made his money. But I don't know if you're going to alienate a little bit of your audience. But they'll still have SmackDown and they'll still have NXT. So I don't think it'll be that big of a problem. And if they really start going over the top on the Mondays, people will dig down in the wallet and shell out the $15.
Professor, thoughts on the move to Netflix?
I think it's going to be good for them, and they can get a little bit more, I guess, risque, go a little bit more. I mean, they've already started anyway, but I do agree with Ryan. I think that they're going to alienate some fans, because some fans like you don't have it. So, but I mean, I don't know. It's both. I see both sides of the token because they can see it on YouTube. It's going to be on YouTube or something like within a day or two. But one thing I want to say about Fatu, it could screw up their plans. Not, I won't say screw up their plans a little bit, but he's got a criminal record. He's a felon. He can't leave the U.S. So nope. That's why it took so long for them to actually bring him out because they were overseas. So they had to wait. And I mean, I think it worked out fine. This was a perfect place for him these last couple of weeks. And I think it worked out fine. I mean, Chicago and New York are two of the hottest U.S. crowds that you can get. So, I mean, I think it worked out in the long run. But I think like when they have the big show in Saudi Arabia, I think it's going to hurt him a little bit because he won't be able to go there.
That's what they have masks for. I ran around with one creative. For a couple of months. It's not that bad.
Yeah, they're going to have to get creative with their writing. But that I think that makes him more endearing. Like, I like him even more that he has a criminal record.
Yeah, they should actually talk about it on the show, saying that they should
address it, yeah.
But that criminal background, doesn't that talk to what I was saying about these guys that can't hold 9-to-5 jobs?
Yeah, it makes him more of a stud. Like, as long as it wasn't, like, sexual assault or something, you know.
I think it was
if he beat somebody up or robbed somebody, I have my limits. But it makes him more endearing as like this enforcer, like dominating threat of a person that he has a real life criminal record.
I got a question for the mouth of the South. What is it gonna take to get Ed involved in watching wrestling every week again, religiously? What's it going to take, Ed? Oh, let it die.
I don't know, man. I really got hooked on the AEW, and I really started to kind of enjoy that and really kind of started it. And I still felt like the WWE was still going after, you know, what Ryan was talking about going after that younger demographic, still kind of using that, like, these guys weren't believable, kind of that one name kind of guy, like, you know, like, just to throw somebody out, like, kind of like, you know, Tatanka. I mean, like, you know, you're going to have you can't come up with a better gimmick for a guy like that. I mean, because he's good in the ring. He's not stiff, you know? Maybe I just need to sit down and, like, do the old Ren and Stimpy and strap myself down in a chair and stick the toothpicks in my eyes and force myself to watch it. I don't know.
Do you have Netflix, Ed?
I do not.
Okay. I don't either.
Okay.
Now, Eddie, I mean, you have to understand. I mean,
my buddy went to the podcast. I got nothing.
The NHL Network this year. I mean, come on. I finally champed the 21st century. So you got to cut me some slack here a little bit, okay?
Okay. We're just throwing it out there. So, you know, if somebody wants to donate to the Ed Wrestling Fund, he's free. You can send him the $15.
Ed, I know guys that know how to steal cable.
Oh, as seen this week on the Facebook page.
Yeah.
So, anything other wrestling related you want to talk to, or we're gonna get to start talking some shitty picks?
One last wrestling note, and I don't know, you may have talked about it the last week or the week before. Everything melds in, so I don't really remember. But there's a slow, like, whispers building that Shane McMahon may be trying to contact AEW about joining them and going over there. So he supposedly contacted a few ex-WWE wrestlers out of there. And supposedly Tony Khan is open to it. So we shall see.
Well, I would like to see it just because of Brad's point last week when we were talking about just having a little bit of competition there. I don't think Shane McMahon would put him over the top, but at least it's something that draws more eyes back. Like, you never know, like, what could happen. It could be great, but going back to what we're talking about who killed WCW, if you look at the Tony Khan thing, there's so many things that are just warning signs. They're on TBS. They had that one show every week. Then they had to go to two shows. Then they had to go to a third show to appease keeping CM Punk, which didn't even work. And CM Punk said he never even wanted another show. He just did that just because he didn't want to address the elephant in the room. Mm-hmm. So just if AEW is going to ever get some traction again, and because people still watch it, but the numbers are in the toilet for places. They need to go get rid of going to these arenas, and I don't know how they're going to sell out Wembley again. And Swerve Strickland versus Will Ospreay is not going to sell out Wembley. I don't care if they're going to put the belt on Will Ospreay in England, but that's they got to go in a different direction. So we'll just have to keep eyes on that rumor, because I've seen it multiple different places. And you know, some of these people with social media, these wrestling people, can't keep their stories under wrap for any surprise. One last thing before we move on for the wrestling, this whole hot tour thing that's
going on. I know what you're talking about.
Did you see the Liv Morgan one?
Yeah.
That's all I gotta say. We'll end the wrestling segment on that one. Professor, it's time for your segment. Get some sports talking going on.
Alrighty. Tom's Shitty Picks is brought to you by Brock Street Brewing Company, located at 244 Brock Street South in Whitby, Ontario. Everything they brew is in-house, including their beers, seltzers, vodka sodas, and their hard iced teas. So if you're in the Whitby area, go check them out and tell them the 1973 podcast sent you. Now, in honor of the 4th of July and all my other fellow Americans, to this week's pick of the week, I am going with Nathan's hot dog eating contest. Brad, I actually have a little conspiracy theory. You can build it sometime. Joey Chestnut is not being allowed to do this contest this week because he took an endorsement deal with an organic hot dog company.
He has like a vegan or vegetarian hot dog, some dumb shit.
However, I'm making my pick. Believe it or not, they have rankings online. If you ever go online and look, they actually have rankings for these. I'm going with the number two ranked eater. His name is Jeffrey Esper from Oxford, Massachusetts. I'm going with him to win, and I will tell you why. He's the 2017-2019 Hooters Wing Eating Champion. 281 wings in 10 minutes.
Jeez. And
nothing says Americana like winning the strawberry shortcake eating contest. 21 pounds in 8 minutes. I'm going with Jeffrey Esper. Don't let me down, dude.
So I challenge anybody that watches this, even people like Ed. Google says Google says hot dog eaters.
That's our first you people.
He said you people.
just Google search hot dog eaters and just see what you get. Just
I'm not Googling that.
Turn your safe search off, put on hot dog eaters and have fun with it. Don't be weak. Get into that. So we're going to wrap up our Stanley Cup talk this week with congratulating the Florida Panthers with
that's your team.
Epic. Well, not my team. That was my pick. But I do love the way they play. And I do love the way that they celebrated with the cup that first 24 hours. Jumping in the ocean, pouring beer off the balcony, you know, into fans' mouths, all that stuff.
Yeah, all 10 of them that showed up.
Yeah, crazy. It's crazy. Yeah,
crazy crowd. There's like 10 people there.
Yeah. More people at rodeos.
That's true. Ed, thoughts on the Panthers?
Man, it was so nice to see a team that just they were grinders, man, and they stuck to what they were true with, and that's how they won the series. And funny story, I picked them in 7. How about that? But it was just really nice to see that. You know, I'd love to see, you know, Paul Maurice, you know, what he said, how he handled the cup. You know, I do have a problem with Steve Levy, though. It kind of pissed me off. You're watching it. The guy just won the Stanley Cup, and then you have to mention that he has the most losses in the NHL, like the most. Like, the dude's been coaching since he's been 28 years old. Like, you got to cut the man some slack. And you're going to, like, you, you know, he just won the Stanley Cup, and you're like, by the way, he has the most losses. Come on, man. Like, that's just lame, and that's why ESPN sucks.
Amongst other reasons.
With the NHL, because they're horrible, and that freaking welfare desk that they had up in Edmonton. Come on, man. Like, you're the number one sports leader in the whole world, and you've got a desk that basically you could have bought at Building 19. Come on.
Well, I'm going to toss this to the Phantom because he actually was rooting for Edmonton. So here's his chance. He can vent right now of all things that didn't happen to the Edmonton Oilers, including not claiming the Conn Smythe trophy on the ice for McDavid. He was
good enough.
Shouldn't have won it anyway. So, but
nonsense.
Phantom?
Yeah. Got it. The Oilers should have won. Fuck the Panthers. They robbed us. They robbed us from history. It would have been so fucking awesome if they had come back. Game 7, I mean, whatever. They would have been known as the biggest losers of all time. That, you know, they probably don't deserve that one. I wanted to see the Oilers come back so bad as they started pushing the series along. And I guess they ran out of gas at the end and they didn't have enough. It was such a good game. It's a great series. That's going to be an all-time series. But as far as like the Conn Smythe, who are you going to give it to? You ain't going to give it to Bob. He almost choked the season. He almost choked the series away. Not going to give it to Barkov. McDavid didn't score the last two games. He still scored 20 more points than Barkov did. He was on his way to breaking Wayne Gretzky's playoff record, which I thought would never, ever get touched. You don't have to be the biggest McDavid fan, but when you were watching how he single-handedly was bringing them back, they didn't have Kane. Leon, I guess he had broken ribs and a broken hand or broken finger or something like that. So he was kind of out of the picture. And he was playing two ways. He was in the corners. He was doing everything. Just can after they figured it out, they tried keying on him, and that was it. Bob played a great game 7, so I thought maybe at the end they might actually give it to him. But the thing that cracks me up, too, is that they were giving McDavid shit for not leaving the locker room after you just lost game 7 and you played probably the last 5 minutes of the game because he didn't come out to get the trophy. Like, who's gonna leave the? You're gonna tell the guys in the room after you just lost game 7, hey, I gotta go get the trophy for being the best player of the playoffs? Come on. If he had gone out and gone and got it, then the narrative would have been the opposite. Like, oh, look how selfish he is. He just lost. He only cares about getting the trophy. So good on him for not going to get it. But on the Panthers side of it, when he didn't come out and get it, one of those guys should have gave their nuts a tug and went over and grabbed the trophy and skated over and just gave it to Bob just to be like, hey, you should have fucking won this. Fuck that guy. You shouldn't get it because we won and they didn't. That would have been fantastic.
That's some wrestling storyline right there.
Oh, man, come on.
But to Ryan's point, though, Ryan, he still looked like the fastest person out on the ice.
He's unbelievable, dude.
Game 7.
He is unbelievable.
And he really is the greatest hockey player today.
Right, like, actually what you can bring to the table, like pure skill. I know you can't, like, compare errors. He's the best player that's ever played. Is how he moves and what he can do.
Hot take.
He's so fast, man.
He's on his way to becoming the Dan Marino of the NHL. He's never going to win one. He's going to win one in Edmonton.
Oof. Ooh, we're gonna have to keep going on.
Tom with these negative waves, man.
Hey, your boy Gay Ray won one.
He was smart enough to go somewhere else.
He might do the same thing.
Man, I late in the podcast.
I still think one of the most clutch players that I've ever seen, and it, you know, over the years, his mystique has grown with how I appreciate the way he plays is Crosby. You get that, and he's not the biggest guy. You get that guy in a game 7. That's one of the guys you want on your team right there, if not the captain of the ship. Sidney Crosby in a game 7 against Mark Messier in a game 7. I mean, that's epic stuff right there. Two guys that will, you got to kind of kill them to beat them. But we'll put that's it for our hockey talk for a little while. We'll move on to, we got football right around the corner for you gentlemen. Going to be getting hot stove and that stuff pretty soon, right? It should be in the queue.
Speaking of hot stove, this week here is my favorite time of year. You got hockey free agency and basketball free agency starting up.
Yeah, that's July 1st. That free agent frenzy. That's always a letdown for me. I'm always thinking it's going to be bigger than what it actually is, and it's always like, ugh.
You're a Flyers fan. You're used to it, though.
All right, so this is Tom's last week on the show. let's stop what we're doing, because Brad's about to ruin us with some tinfoil hat. Thomas, you want to do the lead-in for this?
All righty. Brad's tinfoil hat conspiracy of the week is brought to you by the 1973 Podcast Store, and we're going to insert the old QR code right here because it's too long of a...
It's too long to read.
Yes.
Yeah, don't read it.
Watch the episode. There's swag that pops up like every 5 minutes on the thing. So just click on one of those.
And we got a lot of shit for you to buy. So just go there and buy something.
New aprons, right? For Chris? Yep.
Yes.
Yeah, we have aprons. We have travel mugs. I mean, come on. Everybody buy the mug and stop being so cheap on your way back from the Keys.
And a funny story for Chris's segment, Cooking with Chris, which last week was pretty cool. He's got a good one this week. We'll talk about that after. But the funny story is he went to buy an apron off of there and didn't even click on the free shipping. So he ended up paying for the shipping. So it just goes to show you, don't go online drunk. Thomas?
Yes.
Agency? Tinfoil hat? What do you got?
I just did the lead, and it's all Brad.
Okay, Brad, save us.
Ready to go. Here we go. All right, let me share my screen just so y'all can have a picture here. So this is the Nazi Bell or Daglock. It's one of their Wonder weapons that Hitler invested a lot of money to. Everybody knows he was into the occult. He was into all kinds of wacky shit. So apparently this thing, nobody really knows what it's about. So this is a conspiracy because some authors, you know, back in the 2000s had written some books. They had published some historical, you know, references to what Hitler was doing. And this is kind of listed in one. And then these dudes got slammed and hammered. And of course, when they don't want you to know about stuff, they just go after the people that wrote it. Then they tried to wipe it and erase it and say these dudes are crazy and this never existed. So anyway, it's bell-shaped. The top part spins opposite the bottom part. The theories are that this was kind of like a anti-gravity machine, a teleportation device, a precursor to a UFO, free energy device, maybe a precursor to like a nuclear reactor. It did have a lot of wacky symbols on it. It did have like this purplish like liquid goo that kind of went in there that people are saying maybe was like mercury or plutonium or some other like radioactive material. A lot of folks that came in contact with that, with the bell or the material inside it, died. And those that survived being around this, you know, were allegedly by the SS towards the end of the war. It's even kind of rumored that Hans Kammler, an SS officer, traded knowledge of the bell and that technology for, you know, free passage to America. I think, you know, that was called Operation Paperclip, right, Ed? When we brought the Nazis in? Yeah, so not that far-fetched. Some folks think maybe this thing was a teleportation device. That Hitler kind of used it to teleport to Antarctica, to their little Nazi base in Antarctica. Some folks think he used it to teleport to the dark side of the moon, where they set up their base on the dark side of the moon. Lots of wacky stuff with this thing, man. I don't know what it is. I know Germany had its own Stonehenge, where that was basically built to hold the bell in place and tether it while they were doing their experiments. There's been tons of photographs and rumors of like these UFO precursors flying around Germany. I don't know, man. I think it's a precursor to like a nuclear reactor, personally. There's too many parallels with the energy, you know, ideas with it. So I don't know. What do you guys think?
Brad, what didn't they put plants next to it and they and it died and the plants died like almost like within 24 to 48 hours?
Oh, probably. Like yeah.
You know, and then, you know, the thing about it is that, you know, you brought up the point about, you know, how Nazi officers, you know, made deals with France and Britain and the United States. Of course they did. You know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So that's what we did.
So then our whole space, NASA and everything all set up through like old Nazi scientists and stuff.
Yep. Operation Paperclip, man. Kind of how we got the atom bomb so quick. I'm just going to say, you know, we run as a Nazi scientist.
Yeah.
Well, they're actually, way ahead of us.
That they couldn't figure it out. They actually had a bunch of scientists in England, and they actually bugged the house. And when we dropped the bombs in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, they were told, and they discussed it, and they couldn't believe that we had actually figured it out.
That we figured it out.
We did have some German scientists that we took in before the war, but they were not as close as everybody thinks that they were.
Mm.
So there was a show that was on that I was a huge fan of. It only was on for like 2.5 seasons. It was called UFO Hunters, and they went to the spot where they had the bell, and the framing is still there in Germany, where you can actually still see it. And, you know, they'll tell you hypothetically there was supposedly a German bell here or whatever, and the Glocke is what they call it, whatever. But the funny thing about it is, if there was a story from 1962, 1964 in Pennsylvania, ever heard that story of there were these guys that saw a asteroid or a comet going through the sky in the rural parts of Pennsylvania? So they followed it and it crashed in the woods. So they went and they looked at it and it had a glow to it. And it looked what they thought was a bell-shaped. And at the bottom, on the brown part, at the bottom, they thought it was Egyptian hieroglyphics. Now, that spot still stands in Pennsylvania as a historical site that you can go see. Within like 10 minutes of those guys finding the bell or what they thought was a UFO or whatever, the government showed up, confiscated everybody in the area, shushed them away and put it on a flatbed and took it away.
Mm.
But what's not to say that if it was a timepiece that they could move through time, that before it was confiscated, they sent it, you know, either let's supposedly say into the future and it went 20 years forward and that's what it actually was. So how do you know what happened to it? Nobody knows what happened to it. Did they confiscate it at the end of World War II? Did they confiscate it when they found it in the future, the past? Who knows? So, that as far as some of the really cool conspiracy theories, that's one of them. But the bell is actually a real thing. It's just they don't know what the capabilities of it was. Was it a time piece? Was it a portal? Was just like you were saying, Brad, I was on point with everything that you said. So I'm gonna toss it to the USA professor. What do you think of this week's tinfoil hat?
I'm glad I'm wearing the shirt I'm wearing, because that sounds like comic right there, man. That's some crazy shit.
Yeah, those Germans were so wacky, I'll use that term, in that time. They were doing outlandish things that you only see like a little bit of it with like Raiders of the Lost Ark, where they were going all over the world looking for religious artifacts. They were wicked into the occult. They were confiscating all kinds of things. They were doing awful things. It's not just the stuff that you see in the Diary of Anne Frank or what you know about Auschwitz. They were crossbreeding people with animals. They were taking limbs off of people and putting them on other people. They were sewing people together. They were doing horrific things. And the thing that's sad about the whole thing is, if all those scientists got a pass to come and start NASA, you got to look at if you allow that stuff to happen, it's just a crazy, crazy world that we live in. And, you know, conspiracy theories, how much of it is truth blended with a little bit of fiction to kind of set you off course or to make you think everybody's wearing a tinfoil hat? But Brad always comes up with on-point stuff. And it's funny, too, because there must be an algorithm to what Brad talks about, because a lot of the things that he's brought up since we said this, I've heard about, and I love his take on it because it's usually pretty much my take on it, too. But the algorithm for, like, my week after that on social media is almost all the stuff that Brad talks about. So who's watching who? There's a conspiracy theory to talk about right there. Your algorithm on your phone. How many times do you look at something or talk? It's happened to people that you're working with, and you'll have your phone not even on, and you'll be saying, hey, you know, I should go on Amazon and look at, you know, Razor scooters or whatever. Next thing you know, you go on Facebook and there's Razor scooters on your feed. How many times does that happen with certain things that just come out of a conversation when you're not even searching for it? That's the crazy thing right there. So,
bro, the Malaysian Flight 370, since we did that episode, I've been bombarded with information about how they're going to find it. And it's not a everything that has come down on my, even on my work computer, for crying out loud. I'm like, how the fuck do you go from my phone to my personal computer, my work computer?
They come to you, Brad. Destroy the drive.
They're on to me. Yeah. Right, yeah. Like the CIA, man, my FBI agent is over here just laughing right now, but like, it's crazy. But every 370 Malaysia Flight 370 thing that pops up is like how they're gonna find it, and it wasn't a conspiracy, and it wasn't aliens, or it wasn't a, I'm like, come on, man, stop feeding me this bullshit.
So if ever we do a subject and there's closure eventually of that, we're gonna have to add that as a part two eventually, if something ever, you know, gets debunked, or, you know, we're all talking about stupidity and it ends up being something else, we'll touch on that hopefully too. Speaking on touching on stuff, it's time to bring Chris into the fold, even though he's not on this week's podcast, and talk about his new segment, Cooking with Chris Al, as he likes to call it. very, very good one this week. Thomas, you want to lead us in?
Sure. Cooking with Chris is brought to you by the book Loving Elliot, a fitting tribute to undying love, written by our very own Andy Clark. It's about the oldest special needs Jack Russell Terrier when he passed away at age 21. It's available at Amazon.com, or you can get it on Kindle. If for you, all you youngsters out there, you know, can go do that. So go out and support the cause.
Great book. Buy a book. Stop being cheap.
When the fuck did you write a book?
Many talents there, Bradford. Many talents. The book's been out for a little while, dude.
In about, what, 10 years?
Brad, yeah, guess what you're getting for Christmas now?
Yep. Great stock and stuff. Hey, listen, if two things I have soft spots for, animals and kids. So if you are an animal lover like myself, some of the other people on the podcast, go out. The book is great if you're an older reader, like 12, 13 years old and up. And it's, it's a great story. True story about the dog that I had, 21-year-old dog and special needs. Lived to be the oldest dog with special needs. So wrote a book about it. Here it goes. We're going to drop Chris in right around here with some lobster rolls. So let's do what we do and wind this podcast up and put this one to bed for July 4th. Ed, what do you got?
Well, happy 4th of July, everybody. Ryan, I'm going to be the first to say it. Happy birthday.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Stole You're welcome. Thunder. Go Is ahead. That 20, 20, 25 years old now?
Absolutely.
There you go.
Brad, you have the floor.
I want to give a shout out to Chris, a.k.a. Chris Style, I love the recipes, bro. I'm going to try one out. Also, I'm going to shout out your friends from the Midget Wrestling Night. Those dudes seem like they were wicked cool. Am I saying that right? I don't know, but I would hang out with those dudes in a heartbeat. Chris, we miss you, buddy. Can't wait to have you back.
Professor, what do you got?
In honor of the 4th of July, I would like to say shout out to America and to England. Sorry about your damn luck.
Phantom, what do you got this week?
I'm going to shout out Tom with all that red, white, and blue on. After I watched this debate the other day, you got my vote, brother.
Bro, right?
I'll wrap this one up this week. I don't really like to be the one to finish the episode, but I want to wish my good buddy happy 51st birthday, class of 1973 with the boys. We're all getting older, but in the mind, still 14. got that freshman mentality.
Now, if I kick the bucket between now and July 6th, you guys fucked me.
Did Andy touch you? That's the question.
Multiple times.
Below the waist don't count.
Yeah. It, when you sleep head to feet on a sleepover, it don't count for nothing.
That's right. It's all legal.
So for another week, a lot of fun with the boys. Got some stuff in the works, maybe some watch-alongs. We're going to try to do a deep dive with that, get that going for some fun Mystery Science Theater style. And, this is what we do. Episode 75 coming up. I got to get everybody on board for that pretty soon, and should be pretty cool. So we'll see you for another week, and, we do what we do. Later, fellas.